Hey, are you ready to move your life? I mean, really move it? It's time to turn up the dial on your energy, your health, your sport performance, your happiness, and your relationships. If you want to live with more freedom, more adventure, more passion, more fun, and more success, if you're ready to get your brain in the game and achieve the most out of every area of your life, then it's time to move to live and live to move with your host, Jill Summers.
Jill Summers with Jill M. Summers Performance Coaching. I'm here today with triathlon gurus and legends, Sally Edwards and Lauren Jensen. It's such a pleasure to be here with both of you. I'm really excited to have all of us in one space, and we'll talk a little bit more later about why I'm so excited about that. But I want to start really with finding out a little bit about both of you and what your journey has been in the world of triathlon. What got you started and what has fueled you to stay in it for the length of time that you've been in it? Because Sally, how long have you been involved in the world of triathlon?
I did my first triathlon in 1977, so is that 40 years?
Yes.
Wow. You do the math?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
And did I hear you just say that you're about to turn?
I turned 70 this year, and I have more energy and more zest than ever before, and so the R word, retirement, doesn't exist. I think that if we can continue to get people engaged in their lives and sharing and helping other people, that there's no need for retirement.
Well, and you have been such an incredible impact in the world of women triathlon. And that was my first introduction to you, and the first time I saw you up on stage doing, as you called it, your dog and pony show. I was so inspired. And I just said, I want more of that.
So what inspires Jill? I've always been curious about that.
Living bigger. Okay. Like living alive. And that's what you were for me on that stage. And what you did on the stage is I saw people in that audience all come alive, even though they were scared because the next day a lot of them were doing their first triathlon. But they felt more alive by watching your aliveness. And that was a real light bulb moment for me.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Lauren, how did we run into each other?
My first triathlon was in 1985. And in 1991 was the first time I did a Danskin Women's Triathlon. And I knew of you, and I met you, I think. But it was later in 1993 when I turned professional as a triathlete and did the Danskin Women's Triathlon series. And you and I, early on then, you invited me to come and do some of those talks with you.
Yes, and you were always good at getting on the stage and sharing your story, and I just really loved that. And you related really well with everybody, every woman's body that was in that room, which was really, you know, because it can be a little intimidating. You take a bunch of, you know, iron women like the three of us sitting here, and we can be a bit intimidating and bring it down to the level where they understand that it's about them and not about us.
And Sally, tell us a little bit more about what you're doing now. I know that your journey has taken a number of different turns in the world of triathlon. And of course, one step leads to the next. What step are you on now at the age of almost 70?
So I have a mission to get America fit. And in 2 weeks, I'm going to China. So they've invited me to come and bring some of our training and racing experience to there's a really famous guy named Ken Cooper who wrote a book called Aerobics, and he is the father of aerobics and led the aerobic revolution. And the Chinese have purchased what is going on in Dallas, Texas, and duplicated it in China. And so now there is a Cooper Aerobic Center in China, and it's the grand opening of that. And because of the popularity of what I call data-driven fitness, which is how can we get people fit? And then the second layer of that is, are there some tools they can use to be more successful? Tools like coaches is would be a good example of a tool, like the work that you all do. And mine is putting a little simple something or other with maybe just one little button that just automatically things happen that will get people engaged in their physiology. Because I have found that if people understand things like heart rate or steps, really simple kinds of things we can measure, they do better. They stay more engaged, they get more active. And so my company Heart Zones has transformed from an education company to a technology company, and now we have proprietary and open technology that anybody can connect to. Most of it's free. what can I give from my heart to get people fit wherever they are in the world? So I've kind of transitioned into a different platform, let's say. Danskin was a wonderful for 22 decades of being a platform to speak to women about what we're all in very interested in, which is lifestyle behavior and lifestyle change and getting involved in your life. And this is just a different way of doing the same thing, which I love to do.
And I know I've read at least two or three of your books.
Very good.
You have how many in total?
24.
24 books. Yes. And if people wanted to find those books, where would they go?
Our website is heartzones.com, and I always encourage people to get books from the original source and not from those other companies on the internet. However, it's widely available. And probably my most favorite one now is called Zoning, and Zoning is a program of blue, yellow, and red, easy, moderate, and hard. And it's really, it took me 20 or 30 years to make really complicated physiology as simple as I possibly can.
Well, and that's really interesting because it's one of the things I have seen happen over the years. We've gone from very simple, like not really understanding heart rate. We just went out and did things. And then we went, there's this heart rate thing. And then it was really complicated. And now it's coming back around to being simple again with almost just as much information, which is exciting.
Yeah, because trying to explain threshold training and metabolic response to exercise intensity and coming out of, you know, graduate programs where we made things really complicated or had lots of numbers, to trying to simplify it is much harder than making things complicated. It's easy to make it complicated.
Yeah.
It's hard, really hard.
Sally, all the years I've known you, I've always admired you. You're a very good educator. You know how to take something complex and make it simple. I remember the first time I went to, it was probably 20 years ago in Naperville, Illinois, and you were teaching 50 people in the room about heart rate training. And I was like, wow, she just took a semester of exercise physiology and explained it in 30 minutes, very simply.
Why, thank you, Lauren. And yes. I like the way you take really complicated biomechanics. And Lauren was a physical therapist, so she has a deep background in understanding body and body movements and training and principles of training. And you get incredible results. So.
I've had the great glory of being an athlete under Lauren's coaching, and I would attest to that. She's really fantastic. Yeah. And I know that your journey has taken you a distance as well. Where are you now?
So right now I am the owner and head coach of TriFaster, and I express sharing my knowledge in many ways. I think I'm getting to the point where in a lot of ways I'm the coach of the coaches. So for example, with Wheel and Sprocket Training Hub, it's really great. I have the honor of getting to train all the Wheel and Sprocket employees and other coaches in how to do that program. And other facets, I do the same thing. So I have different programs I built the curriculum for, and then my coaches help me execute it. It's been wonderful. And then of course the program that really you were the first ever coach of, Team Phoenix. And how many women did you have the first year on that? It was a breast cancer team, now it's all cancers, but
I think we had about 15.
Yes.
That first
and
year.
And so this year we will have 60 women.
Wow.
On Team Phoenix, going basically cancer to triathlon in 14 weeks. Redefining themselves.
That's really phenomenal. What would you say is one of your passions to work with those ladies?
You know, well, in general, my life mission is to help people become their best. But I think that working with those ladies is one of the most meaningful things I do, because they've had this diagnosis and lived really through hell. You know, some of them have had chemo, radiation, and surgery, all three. And they've really, to some extent, lost control. They had no control over what happened to them. It's fun helping them really redefine their lives and gain control back through a program where they set an outcome goal and they work really hard to it. And it's transformational. I don't know how else to say it, that they feel like they're gaining control back. All at the same time, building the sisterhood with other women who can understand their journey.
Mm-hmm. If somebody wanted to find out more about your coaching and also Team Phoenix, how would they do that?
So my website is trifaster.com, and I do have a link to the Team Phoenix website, which is through Aurora Healthcare.
That's fantastic. One of my big passions is helping people really bridge the gap between what they've learned in sport and be able to implement that into their daily living, whatever goals they might have, whether it's starting their own business or maybe moving to a new state that they are kind of afraid to do, whatever that might be that's challenging for them. Can either of you think of a time in your triathlon training, racing experience that you went, oh my gosh, I can use this in my life, and you made that leap?
Is the question about an experience or the aha moment when
yes.
you put that together?
yes.
I have a quote that I use a lot, and we were just discussing, and the quote is, when was the last time you did something for the first time? And so that quote, well, I'll say it again, when was the last time? So I, you know, look back into your history and say, gee, have I done something new? Have I done something different? Have I changed? Have I tested? Have I experimented? Have I taken risk? When was the last time you did something for the first time? And then for the first time, am I willing to, you know, go to that start, not go to the starting line, train, prepare, get organized, and then face that challenge, demon, whatever those issues are. And I find that really in my own life something. So when I turned 60, I said, you know, I've done some of the hardest races in the world and all over the world. What's left to do? And maybe people run into the, I've had all these life experiences, you know, what is there left to do? And so I decided to try something really hard, which I works for me, doesn't work for everybody. It works for me as I went the bar pretty high, and I decided to do the Pacific Crest Trail, which at the age of 60, most people don't start, and do 100 miles a year for 28 years. It's 2,800 miles. And so I've been ticking away those,
going
backpacking. And backpacking doesn't fit in a triathlon very well, does it? And it is a, but it, the skills of navigation and equipment, they are the same. And so I've done, you know, I've done 1,000 miles, and I have 1,800 more miles to go. But it gets daunting when you think of hiking 2,800 miles, 100 miles a year. And at the age of 75, at the age of 80, at the age of 85, can I carry weight? Can I still do 100 miles? And I think you just stay, you put your mindset as, I'm not going to age the way I've seen aging happen in the past. Mm-hmm. I'm going to age with a lot of energy and a lot of life and keep challenging myself. So.
Congratulations. That's great.
That's fun.
I know, was it last year that you got a knee replacement?
I got a full knee replacement.
Full knee replacement.
That was a real, they amputate your knee and put in this fake knee. It's it's brutal. And so I did 100 miles last year. So the knee's going to hold up, and I got that backpack a lot lighter with this new knee because it's not going to want to carry weight as much.
So I'm really curious about how you managed the fact that they said, we need to do this knee replacement and you're going to be held up, or you're not going to do running anymore, you're not going to do triathlons anymore. You know, what goes through your mind? Yesterday when I posted a question to the ladies about what they would want me to ask you, one of the questions came up is, what do you do when you can't try anymore?
Well, my orthopedic surgeon said your running career is over, and I was a professional runner for most of my life, you know, winning 100-mile races, and that's my background. And I decided I would enter some open water swims. And so I did the Shark Fest, which is in Lake Tahoe, and I then took the challenge to ride my bike across every state.
Wow.
So once a year, I have done, I think, 6 states now, maybe it's 8 states. We're going to ride across Kansas this year. We rode across Wisconsin last year. And those kinds of challenges, for me, I'm not saying it works for everybody, they're pretty big challenges, work. And so I encourage everybody to, you know, put the, I know Lauren has a bit, what's your big goal? You have a big goal this summer.
Well, the thing I have coming up in 3 weeks is something I've never done before, but in celebration of my 50th birthday, I'm doing Masters Swimming Nationals. And talk about, when is the last time you did something for the first time? I decided, oh, I'm going to give myself a new challenge. So for the first time ever, I competed in the 200 butterfly weeks ago. And it was actually not as bad as I had built it up in my head. And when I got done, I'm like, hey, that's kind of fun. I think I'm going to do it again. So at Masters Nationals, that's going to be one of my events, which is a new thing for me.
Wow. That's really incredible.
So you take this incredible coach, Lauren Jensen, and you, Jill, and they've done all these things, and they're still challenging themselves.
Yeah.
So that's really healthy, mentally and socially and spiritually. And
are you both aware, and it might be kind of hard to come up with this on the spot, but are you aware of the kind of language or conversations you have in your head when you're butting up against those fear roadblocks, like, oh my gosh, I've never done this, and it's kind of scary? And
well, I have a thing. So it relates back to the said what story. The first time I ever did a long distance try, and it was only my second year in the sport, I knew nothing about it. I knew nothing about race nutrition. I just knew I got out on this like 18-mile run, which I hadn't even run that far before, and I felt horrible. And apparently that's called bonking. But at the time, I didn't know what was happening. And I thought I was going to die. I was in France doing this race, way beyond anything I'd ever done. And I came upon the aid station, and they had orange slices. So I had a couple orange slices, and all of a sudden, bing, I was back to like, whoo, I feel great, I can run. So every aid station was orange slices. So when I hit something hard, sometimes I think, I'm just one orange slice away from doing better.
I love that.
It's a good story.
It is a good story. So it's like a shortened little sentence that represents a big
I just think
experience.
Of the orange slice, I'm like, okay, this is really hard right now, but in 5 minutes, it might not be.
Yeah. Are either of you aware of some actions, behaviors that you regularly use to keep yourself sort of settled and grounded and not get sort of swept away with the crazy chaosness of our world?
Well, it's rhythmic breathing, I think, and a lot of people use yoga. But for me, I think the really grounding thing is swimming. And I actually am lucky to live across the street from an inland lake. I deliberately moved 9 years ago, 6 miles, so I could have a lake across the street. And what I really love to do is just go in the lake and shut everything out, and that you can't see or hear anything. There's no boats on this lake. And just connect with myself with the rhythmic breathing and the swimming. So I think that's almost like a form of meditation for me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I live a pretty busy life with lots of people around me that have interests or questions or demands, you might call them. And I get pretty ramped up. And after a while, someone says, you know, Sally, you need to meditate more. And then I realize that my meditation practice has fallen off cliff because that takes a half an hour every day. And where am I going to fit a half an hour in? But it's, you know, probably the second most important half an hour you can spend is just quieting your mind. And so I then say, yes, I need to calm down and get the electricity out of my system. And so I practice Vipassana meditation.
Nice. That reminds me of an experience I had with you, and you probably haven't even thought about this or given it a second thought, but it was during the Danskin Triathlon. I ran into you at the hotel after the long day of being with all the people, and it was the day before the race. And we said hi, and I asked how you're doing, and you said, I'm going to go to my room, and I'm going to take some time for myself now. And I was so struck by that, because often, especially women, we don't take time for ourselves, and even if we do, we don't announce it. We don't say, I need to just go and take some time for myself, refuel my battery so that I can be more for other people down the road.
Yeah.
So I love that you shared that about the meditation.
I don't remember that, but that's
good. Of course.
But I do. I think we should let our insides out a little more. And I know women tend to be a bit of emotional. And yesterday we were at the Wheel and Sprocket Expo, and I ran into Chris Kegel's wife, Mary Catherine, and you know, we just looked at each other and started to cry. And she started crying, I started crying, and it took a long time to stop crying so we could talk about it, his passing. But yeah, I think we should let our insides out.
Yeah, you're talking about the passing of Chris Kegel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who we lost just a couple months ago.
Yeah.
What a wonderful legend in the world of cycling.
Yeah, good friend of mine, and Lauren's and yours.
Yeah. So we're going to switch the topic a little bit here, and this will be kind of a fun question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
10 plus.
I'm celebrating every minute of it.
You want to share what that looks like or means? Or
what does that look
like? Why did you say that? Why do you say you're a 10 plus?
I think I'm a 10 plus because even when I was very young, I just went to the beat of my own drummer.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know, even in high school, all that peer pressure, all that kind of stuff, I don't know, I just did things my way, and for whatever reason, people follow me because they're like, look at her, she's just doing her thing, mm-hmm. you know? And so maybe it's not that weird, you know, but you know, my neighbors think it's weird when I used to practice transitions about once a week. They're like, bike run, bike run, bike. What is she doing? She's leaning her bike up against the mailbox, you know?
Doing it over and over and over again.
So, but I think really for me, it comes down to playfulness. I really like to have that sense of play in whatever I do. And you know, as someone who's turning 50, that might almost be a little odd. I said to David, my son who's 15, you know how every teenager thinks their parents are weird or embarrassing?
Yes.
I said, you know, in your case, you're correct.
And I'm celebrating that.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. There's a city in America called Austin, Texas, and their theme, I don't know what Milwaukee, does Milwaukee have a
beer
city
cheese.
Theme? Cheese?
Brats.
Brats. Yeah. Beer cheese brats.
Harley Davidson. Is Make Austin Weird.
Oh.
That's say it again.
Make Austin Weird. So they go out of their way to try to individualize Austin and allow a lot of breadth, a lot of room for people to be different. Mm-hmm. And I think your question about being weird is really like, can we stop following the peer pressure? Can we be who we really are? Can we reach into our hearts and connect our mindfulness and our heartfulness together? And when we do that, then sometimes we are called weird instead of being who we are. Uh-huh. And that's who Lauren Jensen really is. She's not weird, she's Lauren Jensen. But that sometimes, and particularly with women, where labels are put on us. We're too bossy, or we're too this, or we're too that. And that same label doesn't go. And gender discrimination has been something I've faced my entire life. When I first went in the sporting goods world with my, I started a company called Fleet Feet. Everybody's, you know, started putting labels on me because I was the only woman who owned a business in my hometown of Sacramento, California. And you just every time it comes up, you just say, you know, that's who I am. I'm not weird. You can be who you want to be. You can be different. You can, and stop putting labels mm-hmm. on whether I'm white or a woman or straight or gay or atheist or Christian, whoever I am. Just. Mm-hmm. And America and this has had a turn, I think, much towards everybody being a stereotypical American instead of our freedom.
I'm sad about, one thing I'm sad about our country is in the ways, some ways diversity is celebrated, in some ways it's not. And our country has recently become so polarized. And you used to think of like, what did we say America was? It was like this melting pot of diversity. And now instead of it being a melting pot, there's all this polarity. It makes me pretty sad.
Yeah. How do you think we can impress upon others, men and women, to celebrate their weirdness and their individuality, especially through the world of sport, whether it's triathlon or any other sport?
When I first went to, a group of us got together and we wanted to form a national triathlon organization, and it had several names. It's now called USA Triathlon. I was the only woman in there, were probably six men that were in there, and one of them was the vice president of Speedo, a guy named Carl Thomas. And Carl took over and dominated the table and the conversation, and Carl wasn't even a triathlete, he was a business guy. And I said, you know, here's what's going to happen in the sport of triathlon. There's going to be gender equity. There's going to be equal prize money for women and for men. And there is not going to be discrimination, or I won't participate. And at the time, the participation was necessary because we needed some people to pull out some checkbooks and write some checks to get a bank account started. So it was a combination of the financial pressure and that there was a woman at the table who speaks out on what happened. And it is the first sport, triathlon, that in their our national rules and governance said, if you don't have gender equity in prize money and every other aspect, then it won't be a sanctioned race. So no other sport in America, tennis, volleyball, anything ever put that into their, and I think that type of staunch and strident appearing at the power, wherever the power is really, really important to do.
You display so much strength and talk about even in your younger years, the strength that you had in making a difference and really being a thought leader. Come on, where did that come from? I mean, seriously, that's something that many of us grow into, and it sounds like you had it at such a young age. How did that happen?
as in sport and in triathlon, I will quite often say that I think it's a 50-50 deal. I think 50% of your gift is DNA, and you, no matter what, you have the kinds of muscle, fast twitch muscle and heart size, and 50% is your willingness to take risk and to do what you say, which is learn and grow and change and study and be thoughtful. And I think being thoughtful is a piece that maybe, whereas we live in this really fast, a quick generation where we're expecting things to happen. And so I just think it's who I am. Yeah, there were not a lot of role models back in those days. There was a woman named Billie Jean King who came out, and she was fighting for equity in tennis, and I'm fighting for that in triathlon, because I was involved in running with my running stores. So, you know, and you get knocked down, you get beat up, and you get labeled, and you get, oh, Sally's to this or Sally's to that. And I smile and laugh and go, that's normal. And they just, we need more women doing that.
So you mentioned that Billie Jean King was an idol, a mentor for, was she a mentor? Did you do
No, she was
together?
A peer.
A peer.
We both
okay.
went to University of California, Berkeley at the same time, and we had no women's sports. And, you know, I played on the basketball team, and there were 6 women on the basketball team back in the day.
Is that when you played half court?
Half court basketball. Half court basketball. Uh-huh. And uh-huh. we played in the little gym, and the men had the big gym. And we had the same uniforms for, I mean, it was just like high school sports.
Because girls couldn't run a full court and still be able to be okay. I know Catherine Sisser talks about the message of women not being able to run marathons because their uteruses might fall out. You know, these ridiculous messages that we heard growing up.
Yeah.
Lauren, what would you say has been a mentor or, you know, sort of an idol, somebody that has inspired you along the way?
I would say definitely both of my parents. My mom is a very strong woman. With a very loving way about her strength. And then my dad, who passed away 2 years ago, I really miss him. He definitely had the mindset that women can do anything they really put their mind to. And I think the combination of his openness to that thought and my mom as a role model, a very strong role model, I think helped me have the confidence to become the woman that I am.
Mm-hmm. I know over the years, while I've been working with women triathletes, a common phrase that comes up is, oh, I just don't know if I can take this time for myself and put it into the training, and I have to care for my family, and maybe I also work and so forth. And sometimes the world of triathlon or the sport of triathlon is deemed selfish. It's a selfish sport. What would either one of you want to say about that?
Well, you know, I have to overcome that roadblock of women saying that message, you know. And what I say is, you know, as women in general, we tend to be givers. You know, but it's like the Capricorn. If you're not full inside, you can't spill over and give to others. So have that date with yourself, whether it's 3 times a week. Do what you need to fill yourself up. It's like, you know, that the icon on your phone, you know, how charged it is. Mm. If it's down near the bottom, how are you going to wear all these hats you're trying to wear?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I agree with what Lauren is saying. I think that you are the most important person in your own life. And until you figure that out and prioritize yourself, other people can't really be happy. And in politics, I know, which I've avoided intentionally, the question always is if you become the president or the premier, like the premier of Australia, they just had their first woman elected premier, and she would constantly be challenged. We haven't had a woman president in the United States, so I can't use that as an example. It's unfortunate. It is way overdue, and I don't care what party, I just would like our country run and that role model. I know when the first woman went to space, Sally, I'm going to think of her last name in just a minute, it changed what little girls could think about going to space. And I know that will happen when we see that role model of power and strength and opinions and speaking. It will change how women think about themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a really strong point. The more we see out there and we just begin to mirror and model that, the easier it is to make those changes and those leaps. What is something that people would be surprised to know about each of you?
When I was a little girl, I went into the 4-H, and my dad was a war hero from World War II. And he bought 5 acres of land, and he said, we're going to build a barn, and we're going to have animals, and we're going to learn about farming. And I decided to buy a Hereford steer. And the first time, and I'm 13 years old, that Hereford steer went to market and was slaughtered. You know, it never connected to me that somebody was going to put that cow into their mouth. And so today I'm an avid animal rights person and avid vegetarian, and believing that when we cause violence to animals, we cause violence to humans. And so I believe in a philosophy of peacefulness and calmness and the things we're talking about. And one of those is the food that we eat. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm coming up with something right off the top of my head. I think I am who I am, you know? So I don't know.
We wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe some people will be surprised by the things that come out of my mouth. But I can't.
Did she really just say that?
It's a joke, but I wasn't built with the volume control because I'm loud and or a filter.
What legacy do you each want to leave?
For me, I think it really is all about empowering people to become the best they can be. So I feel like, you know, I used to really focus on performance, my own performance, and that was probably starting to already ride the curve when 7 years ago I was hit by a car and it ended my career as a professional athlete. And so I made a U-turn, and I really had to get to the roots of who I am and what I'm about. And really, it's taking all of these experiences and knowledge I have and passing it on for people to use. So I hope that my legacy, in a way, is a living legacy in the people that are able to make positive changes in their life because of what I've been able to teach them.
Mm-hmm. And I think that applies to Jill, too, I think. I mean, I'm not sure, and maybe you would share as back, so this is a conversation. Mm-hmm. What your legacy might be, because I don't know exactly your age in terms of where you are chronologically. But I really think it's important. If you ask me, gee, what are the three things that are really important? I think it's really important that we figure out why we're on this planet, and then we behave in accordance with that. Mm. And I think Lauren was being on this planet to both be a role model as a professional athlete and then to transform herself, which is what she did, into being a coach the coach that can coach the coach that can coach the person, called the master coach. And I know that my mission, and I've known it most of my life, is that I want to help people get healthy and fit. Mm-hmm. And how can I do that on a pretty mass scale? And the restriction for me with coaching is that there's a lot of one-on-one, and you can't make as big, you can make a local difference, but you can't make a global difference. And so how can I express that? I write books, I speak, I travel, I create software and hardware and wearables and things and retail stores and snowshoe companies and things I've done. And because it's always in line with what it is, the reason. But figuring that out, which is, Jill, I think a big part of your work is mm-hmm. helping people figure out why they're on this mm-hmm. planet and then act in accordance with that, is really valuable. But I'd love for you to answer the question.
Well, turning the tables on me, so much of what both of you have already said. I've always had a passion and a mission to help people live bigger and live. More out loud and to be happy and to really be able to connect with what's going on inside. And if they can do that through sport, I've just experienced how much sport has done that for myself, and I've observed it in other people. And so I'm the kind that I'm like, oh, well, I experienced it, and so it was really awesome, and now I want everybody to experience that too, and it'll be really awesome for them. Well, it's not always. That's one of the lessons that I've learned as I've gone along. But in my legacy too, I would like to be able to know that I made a difference by being here, and I help people get where they needed to go in the way that they needed to get there. Yeah.
Good. That's good. That's wonderful.
Thank you. So you mentioned that your father was a veteran. He served. And there's an interesting thing going on right now in around the Facebook world. There's a push-up challenge that we each do 22 push-ups for 22 days in a row to honor the suicide rate of soldiers or veterans these days. And I'm curious if the two of you would be willing to do my 22 push-ups with me today. Because
I'm going to speak for Sally.
I'm on day 10.
Oh, we're on day 10.
I'm on day 10 of 22. So it would be such an honor to have the two of you do those with me. Would you be able to willing to do that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I spent a year in Vietnam during the what was America calls the Vietnam War, and what I call this the American War in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. It's a perspective of who attacked who and who invaded who. And so that the suicide rate is so high from so many different places. I mean, the number of body bags I saw when I was in Vietnam as a young 22-year-old of drug overload, because it was a depression and drugs and, you know, carrying guns and killing people. So I honor that you're celebrating people in war zones and whatever capacity they went through have experienced. It's horrible. We should never go to war again. There's always a way to solve a problem without shooting missiles and, you know, and attacking and defending the great America. There are global and thoughtful solutions of how to do that.
And unfortunately, I don't know that there is enough awareness around the trauma that people experience having served. Yeah. And it is sort of a forgotten issue. And so I'm really excited that we're able to increase the awareness around that with this mission.
So doing push-ups is great.
All right.
Whatever it takes.
Thank you. So I want to thank both of you so much for taking your time today. It was really fun to get together with you. And you both have been such an inspiration to me in my journey in triathlon. In fact, I have a funny story about Sally. I had completed my first Ironman, and a couple months later, she happened to be in town. I said, Sally, I did my first Ironman. She said, oh, it was great. When's your next one? And I was like, oh, I thought I was just going to be one and done.
And you've done how many now?
But then I had done like a couple more, and I had always done them in Madison, which was basically my hometown, and it was in my backyard. And she goes, well, when are you doing one internationally? And I'm like, I can't do one internationally. And her words stuck in my head for 6 months. And then I signed up for my first international Ironman. And it was really because of Sally, because she just put that little earworm in there, and it kept gnawing away, and it got me to be more and do more. So thank
good.
You
well, I really want to compliment you on your work too.
Thank you.
Your transformation has been fabulous from the how good can I be at triathlon and other activities, and then taking that and getting the education and experience and then building a business out of it. I mean, I want more women to do that, and I want them to be in power roles, and I want them to continue to support and encourage people. But I think you've done a fabulous job, and sometimes we don't get that outside encouragement. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Yeah.
But I have to agree, because I've known you a long time, and I've seen yourself and your career evolve, but your whole thing that you talked about, mindfulness, you've done that actively yourself. Mm-hmm. You've lived it, so you lead it by example. Yeah. So I think that's awesome.
Thank you very much.
And so where are you going with your practice or your business or your philosophy?
So a lot of what I do is work with people who want to make changes in their lives. And for some people, that means that they want to get the most they can out of a triathlon experience. And so I work primarily with mental skills and how they can get into the believe mode, get their brain in the game. I also work with people who want to make change in their lives. And for some people, that's maybe they're going through a divorce, unfortunately, or they want to attract love into their life, or they want to make more money, or they want to build a business, but they find themselves getting stuck behind these roadblocks. One of the places I love to work is with active people who understand what it's like to sacrifice and dedicate and commit to something, and they can use that experience and bridge it into their day-to-day living, and I can remind them, how did you get through that tough race or that tough workout? And they go, oh, that's right. I guess I could use that in my everyday living. So that's a real deep passion of mine.
One of the observations I have about my age group, which is, I think I'm precede both of you in terms of generational, and that I'd encourage you to start looking at, is women, particularly women who thought they might be in a different place than where they are today. That, you know, you have these dreams and you think, you know, when I'm 50, 60, 70, life's going to look like that. And life does not end up always looking like that. Mm-hmm. And how do they resolve that conflict with, I thought I'd, like you just said, I'd have more money, or I'd have more love, or I'd have more of these different things. And it's interesting to watch the dissatisfaction when this American dream of I can have everything and do everything is so embedded into our DNA. And it's not in other countries. Embedded in many of their DNA is, you know, I want a healthy and happy life.
Interesting.
And I take that deal. But we don't have that deal. Ours is status and appearance and money and the size of the houses we live in and how fancy our bicycles are, instead of what your work is, you know, is my heart happy?
And what I've experienced with that, both in myself and with the people I've worked with, is the high level of anxiety that that creates. This constant, I'm not good enough where I am right now. Not good enough. I'm not good enough. And that perpetuates in so much of what they do on a daily basis and how they can't fall asleep at night.
And but at the bottom line, there's really only a couple ways around it. One is either to accept your circumstance or to say, I'm not happy with my circumstance and make the change. But it's hard to,
and then it's hard to
get out of
change.
The starting gate sometimes.
But getting a coach can make, like, you know, getting either one of you two women and make a huge difference in these women's lives. And you, we need to financially invest in ourselves. So I encourage you, your listeners, to reach deeper and go harder and, you know, and do the hard work. And it's fun. At the end, the outcome,
it can be
fun,
and it doesn't have to be this drudgery. It can really be exciting when we realize it's this journey, and the journey can be fun. It doesn't have to be this uphill climb all the time. Thank you very much, ladies. Very fun. So this is Jill with Jill M. Summers Performance Coaching. If you would like to more information about how to implement some of the actions that we discussed today, please visit my website at jillmsummers.com, where you will also find the contact information for both Sally and Lauren.
Thank you,
ladies.
Thanks for being with us today. We invite you to join us on our mission to move people forward and upward. Go to jillmsummers.com, that's jillmsummers.com, for more information and to listen to other inspiring podcasts. And remember to do one thing today that moves your life forward, which impacts others around you to do the same.